everyone. Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Today is Monday, October 31st. I'm Amanda Borchel-Dan, here with our editor, David Horowitz, and U.S. correspondent Jacob Magid, who is here in Israel this week to help out with the elections. Hello to you both.
Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Amanda.
The Israeli elections are finally tomorrow. We'll hear about two reporting trips here in Israel that Jacob has taken over the past several days, as well as final thoughts from David ahead of the voting. So, Jacob, let's start with you. You were in Umm al-Fahm on Saturday. Tell our listeners, what is this place? And give us a little of the sights, the sounds, the smells of it.
Sure. So I made the trip on Saturday. It was actually happened to be a tourism festival, which is the first one that they've ever had. And it was the label of the festival is called Ta'arfuna in Arabic, which means get to know us. And you would think tourism, that would mean this is about for foreigners, but really it ended up being a festival for Jews, for Jewish Israeli citizens to get to know the city that straddles the northern West Bank. It's the second largest Arab city in Israel, and very, very poor, very conservative, a lot of religious residents. And despite being so close to a lot of people came just from Hadera or some cities less than a half hour away, very few people know, if you're Jewish, know about what's going on in some of their Arab towns. So, of course, there were several hundred Jewish people there, but obviously the goal was to speak with some of the Arab residents. I asked them specifically about life in Umm al-Fahm, but obviously I was there to cover the elections, and this festival was just a backdrop for it. But I heard really all different points of view. I was surprised still to find very much clear trends that not necessarily aren't being shown in the polls. There's three different Arab parties that these citizens are basically deciding between. There's Hadash Tal, there's Ra'am, the Islamist party. Hadash Tal is the more communist and Arab nationalist. And then there's Balad, which is this newer, I mean, it's existed for a long time, but it's running on its own for the first time on the most nationalist hardline slate among the three.
So essentially, your piece breaks everything down into four different categories. And the category that most dismayed me, shall I say, is the category of indifference. And it seemed as though, in reading your piece, that a lot of that was coming from the younger voters. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, turnout last year was at 33%. So it's across the board, but definitely more so among younger people who wanted to consistently use the election as a form of protest against the Israeli status quo. What was interesting is that we know about that turnout's always been low, but it was still split. Those people who don't want to vote, a lot of them are young people, are split between not voting just because of apathy and not voting because they're actually boycotting the election, and not only boycotting, but encouraging other people to do so. So it was interesting to speak to some of those very passionate people who had this different idea of how they want to interact with the Israeli government. One of them said that he's pushing for some sort of committee to represent all Palestinians on both sides of the Green Line and in Gaza. And that will be the committee that deals with the Israeli government rather than playing a part in the game, he called it.
One of the other things of note in your piece is that a local boy is no longer running, and that may have an effect on another party's rising or not rising into the Knesset. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we're speaking about Yusuf Jabarin. He's from Umm al-Fahm. He served in the Knesset for several years in the Hadash Tal party, which had been part of the joint list that had broken up two elections ago. And this is someone that a few people told me there that this is why they were voting. He puts our issues on the national and international agenda. And Hadash Tal decided not to have him be in a realistic spot in the list. This is someone that they wanted to even run the party as the chairman. But with him off the list, a lot of people are either just not voting at all, or it's giving another people an excuse to vote for the Balad party, which is still below the threshold in most polls, but definitely rising. And part of that has to do with, I think, a very clear line. He was seen as someone who was kind of set it as it was, especially after the May 2021 riots. He was a very prominent figure in Arab society, Sami Abu Shahada. And he's now running the Balad party, and he's definitely at the forefront. There's a massive picture of him when you enter the town. I mean, he's seen as someone who will be able to bring not just young votes, but possibly more than that.
Okay, we will definitely wait and see tomorrow. Now, you also took a trip to a very different place, the Tel Aviv suburb of Givat Shmuel. I assume there wasn't some kind of festival inviting the Arabs into the city.
No, not so much. This is a town that's known for its mainstream national religious population. It's not So it's not, we're not talking about the settlements, but definitely everyone, most people there are religious in some form, some more traditional, but definitely religious. And I think most people there, or plurality there, voted for the Yamina party last time. And that those votes were used to tip the scale in the favor of the change bloc that built this government. And they, across the board, were very not happy with that decision by Yamina chairman Naftali Bennett. But still, I wanted to know how would they prove critical in tipping the scale again this time? Maybe because they're more mainstream and uncomfortable as they were last time with voting for a party like the Religious Zionism with Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir, that maybe they'll once again vote for a party like Gantz, who the National Unity Party, which is still, it's seen as center-right. But it was clear from the people I spoke with that this was a decision between two parties of Likud and Religious Zionism. They didn't want to, again, tip the scale. These are people that, because they're religious, I think they're, bottom line, they're right-wing. 90% of national religious people are right-wing. So they don't want to be part of a block of parties that also includes left-wing parties. And it was interesting to see how a lot of them I spoke with are actually now fine with voting for Religious Zionism. Some of them might have a harder time than they maybe would wish there was another party that existed, but that wasn't enough to have them switch sides again. I just thought it was funny because Bennett, when he, in the last time he ran, was very intent on not including Ben-Gvir in his coalition or in his party. But what he's ended up doing by joining or forming this government that fell after a year is that he's pushed all those people that voted for him and that were uncomfortable with Ben-Gvir as well into Ben-Gvir's arms. And that's why we're seeing him get between 13 and 15 seats in the polls, or 12 seats to 15 seats in the polls. So it's very interesting to see how this town has really shifted further to the right in terms of how they're voting. So you might ask that, okay, wait, but there's still Ayala Chaked in the Jewish Home Party. And that's the perfect middle ground between the two. But I think they see her as part of Bennett's part of the Bennett decision to betray them, they say, and they don't trust her. And I think the national religious particularly have this, I think, phobia of the threshold that they don't want to risk again after seeing it happen in the 2019 election with Bennett and Chaked's party, and then also in the 90s with the Stichia party that didn't cross the threshold and then led to the Oslo Accords because Rabin was elected.
Okay, really fascinating, Jacob. And I understand that we'll hear more from you on Ben-Gvir tomorrow, correct? You're spending the day together.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So have a great day, and I look forward to hearing more.
Thanks.
We'll go to a short break now. Hey, podcast listeners. As you know, Israeli cooking is taking the world by storm. Now here's your chance to join in. Times of Israel is excited to present our new virtual cooking series, Batei Avon, where expert chefs show you how to make classic and modern Israeli dishes. After you join the Times of Israel community, you'll have the opportunity to ask live questions to a series of well-known chefs such as Susie Fishbein and the Hala Prince. Can't make it to a live session? The workshops are recorded for you to watch at your leisure. TOI community members get exclusive access to all previous recordings and future sessions. To participate, join the Times of Israel community. There's a link to join on our homepage and every single page on the site. Enjoy! And we're back. Now, David, we've talked about the potential rise of the far-right parties a lot on the podcast. You wrote another op-ed warning about potential consequences last week that included a section that I thought was really important to highlight, in which you wrote about how this is not happening in a vacuum. So what are some of the variables that brought us to this problematic, or probable, at least, outcome?
Well, I think, you know, there's a reality on the ground and over the last few years that's a function here. I don't think one should estimate the traumatizing impact of the Second Intifada for Israelis. It was indeed 20, 21, 22 years ago, but it was an onslaught of suicide bombings, and it came, you know, in the wake of an effort to try and broker some kind of peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. And when you lived in that Israel and you left home every day knowing that people were trying to kill you, and that fairly often things were blowing up, buses and restaurants and shopping malls and so on, that was a very, very, it was a terrible period to live through, but it was also profoundly impactful in terms of mainstream Israelis' attitudes to the Palestinians. It persuaded the middle ground in Israel that there was no agreement to be reached in the foreseeable future. So that kind of moved the middle ground further to what in Israel we call the right. You know, left-right definitions that are so strongly about the Palestinian issue. So that moved the middle ground to the right. And I don't think anything since then has persuaded Israelis that the Hamas is avowedly out to destroy this country, but Mahmoud Abbas has peddled a narrative of Jewish illegitimacy in this part of the world, and the hostility is clear to Israelis. So we moved. And then in terms of, you know, domestic political landscape, you also have some of the Arab political leadership that is also, there's a party that's anti-Zionist, Balad, and even among Arab politicians who are not from Balad, you have some or frequent expressions of empathy and support for Palestinians who are trying to kill Israelis. In the last few days, an Arab Knesset member hailed the members of the Lion's Den terror group in Nablus in the West Bank who were killed in a confrontation with the IDF as martyrs. I mean, she eulogized them. And these were people who were trying to kill her fellow Israeli citizens. It's very troubling. And in that context, when there's a sense of a failure to ensure the absolute security that everybody would want, pessimism about the prospect of diplomatic progress, and a politician who emerges, like Itamar Ben-Gvir, full of confidence and ostensible panaceas and indifference to subtlety in terms of the very complicated Israeli-Palestinian dance, that's very attractive. And that's why religious Zionism of Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich are doing very well. They're fresh. They haven't failed in terms of security panaceas. They're unproven. And there is a lot of the Israeli electorate that appears willing to place its faith in them.
Now, how much would you say that the quote-unquote betrayal of Naftali Bennett and Ayelet Shaked plays into the votership for religious Zionism?
I think for a lot of people who voted for Yamina and Bennett because they knew that they were voting for a party that would sit with Netanyahu in a coalition rather than one that would oppose him, that's a bitter blow. I understand that sense. And the problem that I think many of those voters have is they don't know who to vote for. They may not be comfortable with the merged Smotrich Ben-Gvir religious Zionism party, which includes other very extreme elements as well. You know, we have an abundance of parties in Israel, but parties that are likely to clear the threshold, none, I think, that clearly speaks to a non-far-right religious Zionism. So I think there is a sense of betrayal and a bit of a sense of, so who do we vote for now? And some people, you know, obviously all of us on election day are holding our nose to some extent. There aren't many Israelis who say, this party just speaks to my soul. Well, you know, maybe there are some, but I think for many, there's, you know, this is the least bad of my options, or this is the one I'm most comfortable with. So I think in that part of the spectrum, which is sometimes defined as the soft right, but, you know, the soft religious right, I don't know how to define it. But I think there is a swathe of the electorate that whoever it chooses will be holding its nose particularly tightly.
Of course, this just leads us to the joke in Hebrew that the Hebrew verb for putting your ballot inside the box is the same verb for diarrhea, lishalshel. But moving back to more serious things, we also recently had widespread violence in mixed Arab and Jewish cities, which is obviously still in our collective history. Do you think that this also plays into the rise of the far right right now?
Yeah, I do think so. And that's, you know, I did mention that in the piece as among the factors. And it's an issue that underlines the problem here because Itamar Ben-Gvir was accused by the head of the police of fanning the flames of that violence. So on the one hand, as somebody who is insisting on a more forceful approach to confrontations with Arabs, and that may be appealing to some. His critics, myself certainly included, would argue that he is among the exacerbators of those tensions. You know, our reality is complicated and it requires dexterity and wisdom. It does not require blundering in that will exacerbate tensions. But it's part of his appeal, and it's part of why his critics, myself included, are so worried by his rise.
Now, you began your remarks hearkening to the second Intifada, the 2001, the 2002, very dark period. But I wonder if you can compare what's happening right now to the lead up to the murder of our Prime Minister, Yitzhak Rabin, November 4th, 1995, 27 years ago. Are we at this level of discomfort in the country, would you say, David?
I think it's a different complex reality. There was extremist, profound hostility to Rabin's role in attempting to achieve an agreement with the Palestinians. And it went to the furthest extreme, which was the assassination of the prime minister. I don't think it's comparable to the situation now. I think the situation now is that the middle ground of Israel has shifted, and the shift has sort of moved us all along the spectrum towards the right. If the polls are anything like accurate and there's a major rise, a huge rise in the support for a very, very extreme party, and if we also understand that the Likud itself, I think, has shifted to the right as well, Israel is in a different place. And it's the choices that it is about to make tomorrow and the consequences of those choices in terms of policies, they will have been determined by an electorate of its own free will. They will be choosing to place Israel in a different place. And I don't think that compares to the extremism that led to the assassination of a prime minister. Of course, you know, that there are extremists and there are, you know, people who are on the very fringe. But now, I think, like I say, I think the country has moved, and a large proportion of the electorate wants to see an Israel with different principles and different policies rather than the situation of 27 years ago.
Okay, David, thank you for these thoughts the day before the election. Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time,
Shalom.